Hello, I'm Justine.
And I'm Brandon.
And this is the Cozy Co-op Nights.
Nights? Is it because we're... Oh, right, because it's the
it
time?
It is.
I mean, I post...
9:45 in the evening.
I post this every morning anyway, so, like, they don't know.
Yeah, but we're coming at you from the night.
Have we ever told them about that? I forgot news.
What do you mean? Oh, we don't have any
the news. Is
just
super
do it on the fly. E3's coming up.
Oh, God. Okay, yeah, I'll get to that when I get to that. For now, yeah, let's finish doing our intro. What are we?
The Cozy Co-op.
And what is that?
Oh, it is a podcast where a creative writer and a games journalist talk about video games. And tonight it gets saucy. Because it's late at night.
Oh my God. I thought you were going on about this being another BioWare.
Oh.
Can you really have that romantic meet-em-ups going on?
Yes, there is romance options. There are romance options in Jade Empire.
Yeah. Guess what game we're playing, talking about?
Jade Empire.
It only took a month.
Oh, it was almost a month.
It was, okay, this is, we set, with three episodes was the first time we said, hey, it's gonna be Jade Empire next.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't, and then it wasn't, and then now it is.
Yeah, because the first time we had to say, no, it's not, was...
Dark Souls.
We just didn't have one.
Yeah.
And then we did Dark Souls, and then I was not here.
Yeah.
And you did your thing. So that is
well, a month.
Yeah. It's 3 weeks. It's not a month.
Announced it. Missed a week. Dark Souls. I can't hold up 4 fingers at a time.
Bennett Foddy.
Us. 4 weeks. Three okay. episodes.
Now that we have learned our math skills.
Do-do-do.
Let's do the news.
What's that jingle? All right, news. So... most recent bit of news, they accidentally leaked Hitman 2.
Oops.
Does that make any sense to you?
I mean, yeah.
That's fair.
That's a very straightforward sentence.
Do you know about the Hitman games?
Yeah.
So you,
I saw,
bald dude, barcode in the back of your head, you go and you assassinate people. Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, made by a company called IO Interactive. IOI. Yeah.
And I don't know why, but I feel like there is a spy organization in some movie that I saw that's called the IOI.
The IOI were the bad guys in a Ready Player One.
God, you're right. Shoot. Okay, continue. I was thinking Spy Kids, but
why,
that's the OSS.
That's why I almost said IOI, because, yeah, that... Anyway.
Okay.
Warner Brothers, so Warner Brothers Games recently posted on social media, hey, we've got a cool announcement on Thursday. Coincidentally, IO Interactive put up an announcement going, hey, you like Hitman? Well, pay attention on Thursday.
Mm.
People are like, hey, wait a second. We know you guys are partnered.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all are talking about the same thing. So then somebody else, they dug through the server files, Warner Brothers server
That's
files.
That's mean. Don't do that.
And they found a graphic that said Hitman 2.
Okay.
Now, this graphic is gone now. It's been removed from where it was.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know how that thing of like, when you try to hide the truth, you prove you're guilty? It's that. The fact that it's now disappeared after it's been discovered was Warner Brothers going, oh, you weren't supposed to see that.
Oh, pay no attention.
It must
be
real.
The curtain.
So, Hitman 2 is probably going to be announced on Thursday by Warner Brothers. E3 is next week.
E3!
Which, E3 starts...
It's going to be the video games bonanza.
We're going to have a long news segment next week.
Well, we'll try and keep it brief.
I'm going to try.
I have to assume that a lot of the people listening to a video game podcast will already be on that E3 train.
That makes sense.
So, but if you're not, you'll get a little bit of a fill-in on what's happening in the crazy...
It very well might
wild,
just straight up...
Wild West world of video games.
It might straight up be just me listing one sentence. This happened, and then this happened, and then also this was announced, and then that was announced.
Oh, yeah. So, it's our recording of next week's episode is going to hit right in the middle of E3. So Brandon's going to be a little strung out.
Right after all of the press announcements.
Yeah.
Right in the middle of the actual event itself, I'm going to die.
Yeah, so we might do another Justine-centric episode next week.
I don't know what we're doing next. We didn't write it down.
I'll bring it up on my phone while you continue to talk about the next news thing.
Right, so Fallout 76. I don't think I talked about that one last week. Bethesda announced a new Fallout game called Fallout 76. The problem is we don't know diddly about it.
Diddly?
We know that...
Dilly dilly?
Dilly dilly. We know that Fallout 76 is based in Vault 76, and we know that Vault 76 was the vault that opens 20 years after the nuclear explosions with the purpose of repopulating. We also know that the right people have stated this is not going to be a single-player RPG-style game. Wait, what?
Are we doing Lego or Minecraft?
I don't know. Let's sit on it for now.
Okay.
So, Fallout 76, we don't know diddly. It will... I have a reputable source that has told me it is going to release sooner than you might think. Very specifically phrased that way. But you can't tell me much, of course, because this is a very under-wraps game. God, I wish I knew where they got their information. But I trust them. I can't think of anything else news-wise at the moment.
Well, that was three, so...
It was two.
No, you did one before E3, and then you did this one after. You did the Hitman, and then you did
E3. Does E3 count as an announcement?
E3 counts. It's video game news.
Okay, so people who listen to the podcast are in tune with gaming culture enough to know about the happenings of E3.
Listen.
But not in tune enough to know that E3 is happening.
I reject your logic and substitute my own. Let's move on.
Let's talk about Jade Empire.
So, yeah, after a month of saying that we're going to do an episode about this game, I finally finished it yesterday.
Yeah, because you hadn't, right. Tell me. Well, hold on. Will it be spoiler for you to tell me about this?
Oh, absolutely.
Then maybe we should wait.
That's something that I'm going to say right now is, like, there is a bit of a twist to this game. And if you don't want to be spoiled, then, you know, maybe don't listen after the break.
In the end, you wake up in a high-tech biopod called the, what was it, Synergy? I'm trying to make an Assassin's Creed joke.
Okay.
Because apparently that's, Assassin's Creed's a sci-fi
no,
game.
You are like 100% not right on
what
the name
that creature?
Of that pod.
The Animus, that's what
the
it's
Animus,
called.
The Animus, yeah. Anyway... So, a brief overview of Jade Empire. It's one of BioWare's earlier RPGs.
RPGs?
I was going to say RPG games, but that's very redundant. I didn't want to do that. I can't do it as
that's
the writer.
Fair. ATM machine.
Yeah, MLB baseball. GPS system. I could go on. They irritate me so.
When that happens, you just have to take the redundant letter and change it. So, like, MLB baseball, just make it babies.
Major League Baby Baseball.
Major League Baby Baseball. Yeah.
GPS sweet system.
Automated teller macaroni machine.
This is not what our podcast is about.
It serves pasta that you've deposited previously.
Tune in later to our grammar podcast where we talk about all the ins and outs of the English language.
Dilly dilly and whatnot.
That should be the name
of
it.
We can't be having inside jokes.
Grammar
on the
podcast is dilly dilly and whatnot.
Dilly dilly and whatnot.
So, the game is based in.
That's our radio name. I'm dilly dilly
and
here
I'm
with the
whatnot.
Yeah. Ooh, bark, bark.
Can I talk about this video game? We had a burger party and we're both a little bit, you know.
You say burger party, you mean we had a burger.
We each had a burger and some fries at Steak and Shake, but it was a party. So I kicked it.
A party for our taste buds. Please do not kick the microphone stand.
So it is a game set in what is basically fantasy China. You're in...
Can I ask a question? Is it not called China, then?
It's not. And I think that's because there are, you know, it's, there's a lot of fantasy aspects to it. I don't think this is actual China. There, however, it could, it very well could be, and they just don't call it China because that's not natively what they call it. I have no idea, because I know in Japan they don't natively call
true.
It Japan.
That's true, Nihon.
Nihon, yeah. So I don't know if China may have a different name, and we colonizers gave it something new. But and in the game, it is referred to as the Jade Empire is where you are, the location. Okay. Now let me get through the synopsis so that we can get to the other things.
Okay.
So you, the character that you play, male or female, you can choose from several different character models. You can't necessarily customize your character. You begin as the star pupil of a martial arts school in a town called Two Rivers. And after some events that lead to the school and the town getting destroyed, you go on a madcap run across the Jade Empire to...
Madcap?
Yes.
I've never heard this term.
It's, we will look it up later. And you will see that it is a term. It's a, I think it's old-fashioned, but it is a term.
Okay.
It's kind of like Wild Goose Chase.
That's fair.
You go on a run across the empire to...
Oh, is it like Mad Hatter type deal?
I guess.
Because I...
We'll talk about it later. Right. This is not our grammar podcast.
Jade Empire. Yes, continue.
Man, what did those burgers do to you? So, you basically try to take down the emperor because much of... This is something that I'm going to talk about in why the game, I think, is very, very good, because it does it does give you levels in a way that I don't, you know, not a lot of the BioWare games do.
What do you mean by gives you levels?
So when you start out, now we're going to actually get into the game stuff.
Okay.
Is when you start out in Two Rivers, you're the star pupil, you have a very mysterious past, you were brought there as a baby. After your people and your
home Wait, you was mean your people.
Destroyed. And Master Lee, your teacher, brought you to the school and raised you. And you are the best because just basically by nature of him sort of favoring you and you being there the longest.
Okay.
The story goes he set up the school when he came there with your character. You start out with just the one companion, who is Dawnstar. Some people find her annoying. I find her absolutely enchanting.
I have a very vague recollection. Like, I recall the name. That's about
it. I love Dawnstar. She's very sweet, and she's a very emotional and tender kind of person. But you the first time you meet her in-game, she's been your longtime friend, but the first time you as a player meet her, she's got some backbone. She's snapping at Gao the Lesser. Another character.
He's the guy who does that voice I recognized, yeah?
It's Nathan Fillion.
Oh, who's the other one? Sven from Skyrim?
Oh, he might be in there, I don't know.
The voice actor I don't know the name of, but I know the voice of. I think he's in this game. I forgot, yeah, Nathan Fillion's in this, isn't he?
Yes, he's Gao the Lesser. And it's funny, because that seems to be the role that Mr. Fillion gets anymore, is since he's so famous and stuff, they will often give him the role of the fool, the malintentioned fool.
Mm-hmm. Because, like, his voice has, like, that, I guess, bravado?
No pun intended. I just realized his name was Mal on Firefly, and so I got him famous. Ha ha ha. Deep cuts.
Okay. Oh!
So,
please tell me this isn't a word podcast.
You'd
be hitting me with these hard words.
But that's your first sort of... Your first, like, big villain is Gao the Lesser. I mean, you have pirates that come in and raid the town, and you fight them all. You fight off the first wave with Dawnstar and Master Lee. But then, afterward, everyone's recovering and stuff, and then Dawnstar goes missing. And it's because Gao the Lesser kidnapped her and left town.
That's rude.
So you kind of follow along behind him, but as you do... There are pirates now invading the town. And so you go after Gao, and you find out that these are Gao's men. Specifically, they're his father's men.
Yeah.
Because his father is the head of a gang.
Is his father Gao the Greater?
It is.
Okay. I couldn't remember if it was his father or his brother.
No, his father's Gao the Greater. And this is why Gao was in the school. He's not necessarily any good at what he does. He doesn't accept the teachings. He would rather use the dark arts that his father has taught him. But he's there because his father wanted him there. Probably to get him out of the way.
Can I say the parallel I'm seeing here?
Which is what?
Malfoy?
Yeah, I mean, it's a trope.
That's fair,
it's
yeah.
Standard.
Snooty boy of father who prefers darker methods.
Yeah, rich, well-known father.
Position of power.
Yes, so you go after Gao the Lesser, trying to find Dawnstar. He's run off to a cave in the marshes. This is where you encounter Sagacious Zhu, who's one of my favorite characters in this game.
Which, I love their name, because, was it Sagacious?
Sagacious Zhu, yes.
Is it Sagacious Zhu? Or
yes.
Is it one word, Sagacious
it's
Zhu?
It's two words.
It's two words.
It's his,
Sagacious
basically
Zhu.
A title and then Zhu. I mean...
Is Sagacious a... Like an adjective?
It's a, yeah.
Okay.
It's like wise, like sage.
Okay. I'm sitting here thinking, wow, his name sounds like it would be an adjective.
It is an adjective. Because if you look at the player character names that, you know, you can change the name of your character if you wish, but they all have their own names.
Uh-huh.
And the one that I like to play is named Radiant Gen Z.
Oh, so they have those, the I almost said prequel. Why am I not able to pick the right words today?
Because of that burger party.
Must have been the burger party. Got up all in my word banks and just pooped on them.
So...
Quality content. Go
yeah,
on.
So, that's your first villain. Is you're going after Gao the Lesser, who is a spoiled boy, who wanted Dawnstar, couldn't have her, kidnapped her, and let the town get destroyed.
Yeah.
So...
I remember this.
When you encounter him in this cave, he says to you, I've saved her life, and because you ran... You know, I didn't want to save yours, but here we are. And you're like, what do you mean? He's like, that town's gonna be in ashes in the hour. So, you defeat Gao the Lesser, grab Dawnstar and Sagacious Zhu, your new buddy... And you go running off back into the marshes where, you know, at this point, you've probably either fought all of Gao's men or made them all run off and you steal a plane.
They have planes.
Yeah, so they have planes and low tech mechanical stuff in this game, which is very cool to me. It's not so much steampunk. It's just like rudimentary advanced technology. Call them flyers.
How would you compare it to like Da Vinci's design?
So it's like a think a very early propeller plane. And they describe it in the game, flying one of those is like directing the yoke of an oxen. So you've got like one lever that's connected to straps that go to, like, the wings of the plane
uh-huh.
and stuff like that. So it's not necessarily as, you know, popsicle sticks and glue as I make it sound. But it looks fairly lightweight and not sturdy. And, in fact, you do crash it.
That does seem like a bit of a time inconsistency.
Not necessarily, especially when you... Because
everything else, it gives like this... If it's China, is feudal the appropriate word?
It's fairly feudal, but however, you've never seen all of Avatar The Last Airbender, which I know a lot of our listeners are gasping right now, but you... As you get through that show, more of this stuff crops up. Because I will tell you, the inventor of the flyer... is contemporary in this game. He's actually one of your companions eventually.
Okay.
So this is new. They're not everywhere, and they explain as much when you first get to the flyer. Not a lot of people know how to fly them. They're very, very, very new, and only the Imperial Army and very rich people have them.
Gotcha.
And they're not stable, which is why you crash the thing. You go back to Two Rivers. It's all burned down. It's in flames. You fight some of Gao's men. But overall, you know, it's a lost battle. However, Master Li is gone, and now you have to go find him. He's not dead, he's missing.
Gotcha.
And you think he was kidnapped by Gao the Greater's men.
Of course.
So, Now, so this is your next level. Is first it was Gao the Lesser is my enemy. Now you're like, oh, no, it's Gao the Greater. And I'm going to get into spoiler territory a little bit. But as you move on, I mean, you find out more and more about the greater plot of the Empire. One thing that is special about Dawnstar is she can see ghosts.
I remember this.
And it's not like ghosts are hard to see. You fight many ghosts in this game.
Oh,
but
yeah.
She has this sensitivity to spirits in the other world. And they're completely... I don't want to say wild, but they cannot find rest. So there are just spirits wandering. And she's having a hard time because she feels all of this.
Yeah, she's woke.
She's very woke to the spirits.
Ghost woke.
So that's something that I find very interesting is you're given these companions initially who have either talents or already come with knowledge that is pertinent to you as you progress. So you set on this path, and it is all about, you know, it was your destiny to get here and whatnot. But as you're going on this path, you get little bits of information at a time until you get all the way to the top, and all of it makes sense. And you're also at the top tier villain after going through several of them.
Okay.
And you finding out who the real enemy is and what the real problem of the Empire is.
Now, how does that handle feeling repetitive?
In that the stakes get higher. So it's not... I mean, so you go after Gao the Lesser because your friend is in danger.
Okay.
That's all you know. You don't really know about Two Rivers being in danger. You just know that Dawnstar is gone. You have to go get her back. So this might warrant a roll of the eyes. Gao the Lesser being a brat again. I know I can kick his butt because I've done it before. I'm going to go get him. And then your town is destroyed and your master is missing. He's the only parent you've ever known. I have to get him back. The only lead I have is Gao the Greater. But as you keep going, you're like, okay, I'm finding out more things about my master that I didn't know. I'm finding out more things about these ghosts that's making more sense as to why they're here. And you start interacting with deities. And you find out more about yourself as, you know, an object of fate. You understand your place better and better. Why are you smiling at me?
You know what my favorite interaction with a deity was?
What?
Deity's nuts!
I'm cutting this out. No more burgers for you. Anyway. But that's how it keeps from being a repetitive kind of thing. Because it doesn't feel like Mega Man bosses, where you just go from one to the next. It is a...
It's okay, because I was worried it was like a turtles all the way down, you know. The boss gets greater, the stakes get greater, the boss... And
no,
that feels numb after a point, I'd imagine.
But. Because they aren't necessarily connected either. Gao the Greater? Not necessarily connected to the greater evil. It just happens to go along with what's happening.
Oh, but the way it transitions feels good?
It's very natural, because... Honestly, the way that it levels, I didn't even really think hard about it until sitting here going, oh, now, and it's set up so well by Gao the Lesser, Gao the Greater.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have the Lotus Assassins. And then you have the Emperor. Actually, no, it's like the Lotus Assassins, Death's Hand, the Emperor.
I see.
So you keep having to go, and this is all exploratory. This is, I have to go after this guy. Oh, it's not necessarily your princess is in another castle. It's like, I'm a piece to this puzzle.
I see.
So that's a major reason I think I really like this game. Plus, it's just a beautiful game. It's stunning. Like, I mean, it's older graphics.
See, that's what threw me off, because it's keen in the later era of they're really punching in on the 3D.
I think it's an early 2000s game.
Yeah.
So like 2003, so like, 2005.
This is where 3D games were established enough to where we're not getting like, you know, Nintendo 64 quality, yeah, which do not age well.
Yeah.
And I think this game came out right before they started making games that can age well visually. I think it still is a bit hard to look at.
So I did go back and play it the other day with that in mind. You know, how hard the graphics are. So they are stiff. There's not a lot of flexibility to it. There's not a lot of detail. Some of the faces look very flat.
I was going
to
say flat faces, yeah.
There's a lot of repeat stuff going on. However, they did make the attempt, and this is something that is kind of a staple of a lot of those older BioWare RPGs, is their facial expressions reflect the tone of the sentence you're choosing. So,
which is something that not a lot of people could really get working well at the time.
But it's... It is very obvious because you have three facial expressions for your character. One of them is like a happy facial expression, which you don't see too often. The other is neutral. And then there's like a scowling expression. And sometimes there's a sad one. So that kind of tells you, you know, am I empathizing with this line? Because it is, this is unlike the newer BioWare games where you choose a dialogue option and then your character says something, which isn't necessarily word for word.
That's right. You don't talk in this one.
You don't talk
in this
game.
You don't have a voiced main character.
But, so, it can be a little bit difficult, because I know this is a big problem in Dragon Age, is you select an option, and then your character's suddenly yelling at the other person. You're like, no, I was trying to be very neutral. So I think this is where that does come in, where it's, you know, it's hard to tell through text what the emotion of this is.
People had a very similar complaint with Fallout 4, because in the previous Fallout games, it said, it gave you your response options, and it gave you them word for word. So you knew exactly what you were saying. But in Fallout 4, they simplified it to, like...
Yeah, this
why,
is what Dragon Age does
how,
in Mass Effect.
What, when, and you pick, okay, why? That sounds innocent enough. And it's like, why are you so dumb? And
yeah.
Like, whoa, calm down. I didn't want to attack him like this.
Yeah, people have that problem with Dragon Age a lot, because I've done it. I've ended up yelling at someone I didn't want to. Or, you know, breaking relationships with people I didn't intend to. But the... I in the notes here, I wrote, loved the facial expression tells you if your dialogue is mean engine.
yes, that engine.
So, but
Oblivion plays it well.
The reason I think it's most helpful with something like Jade Empire is because that is kind of the devs telling you there's two, in the way that, you know, Knights of the Old Republic was, you have two paths. You have Way of the Open Palm. And you have Way of the Closed Fist. Now,
high fives and fist bumps.
Tell me which one's the mean one and which one's the nice one.
I'm going to assume the open palm is the good boy's one.
Yes.
Okay.
And that one's all blue and shiny. And then the closed
and
fist
gentle.
Is red and dark. And yeah, so I always go Way of the Open Palm because I like the peaceful options. So if you're going through dialogue options and one of them... And especially if you're just talking to normal people, one of them is a scowly face. That's probably the Way of the Closed Fist option. You probably don't want to say that one,
wait,
or you'll
wait,
get mean
so,
points.
Hold on. Are you saying that, like, you get to see your facial expression before you...
Yes.
Okay.
As you're hovering over the different dialogue options, it shows you a different expression.
Oh, all so, right.
Yes.
That's cool. I like that.
So, we should cut to the ad break so that I can get into a little more spoilery territory.
Are you in the Imperial City and looking for some excitement? Come to the Imperial Arena, where you can watch the bloodiest, the meanest, the most violent fighting around. Watch as challengers skilled in martial arts battle against demons, beasts, cannibals, and even each other! Looking to compete? Go talk to Kwai the Prompter.
Key
the Promoter. And he'll answer you in the qualifying rounds. Are you tough enough to make your way through the bronze, the silver, and the gold levels? Enter the Imperial Arena and show your emperor what you're made of.
You okay?
How was
that? Worse than the Doom Break?
That one was harder on me, honestly, because I put punch into that one.
I could see your neck muscles straining.
My neck with my head is getting warm.
So I'm actually going to just use that to transition into my favorite part of the game.
Hold on. I've not played much of this game, so I've not gotten to the arena. From having just read that, I have an inkling of...
Yeah, that was basically a summary of what the arena is.
Did I do that voice any justice?
There's no announcer. There's probably an announcer. Okay. It's like right before the fight.
So I wasn't trying to emulate a specific character. Did I do good? Will you give
you
me validation?
Very good.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of you.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to need a glass of water after
this. Yes, probably. Good thing you don't have to talk all that much.
So, yeah, continue.
So, the Imperial Arena
is
something I want to talk about before I get into any more of the story stuff. And it is, I think, super fun for the player. And then it is, I mean, it is, to an extent, key to the plot, depending on the route you take.
Oh, that's interesting.
Actually, no, I think it is just straight up key to the plot. And then it's good for the fighting stuff. So first off, with it being, you know, just fun, is, yeah, you go into this arena, which is a beautiful arena, and you go running around in here for a while, meet a lot of different people, some people betting on the fighters. There's Key the promoter, who you go talk to. He's kind of your hype man, who you go talk to, and he's like, yeah, I'll get you signed up for a fight. You just come in here, and I'll get you a fight. And you're, you know, the first guy you want to fight is over there, and you see a man with two black eyes in the corner of the room, and it is the guy who is the... So you have to fight the champion of each of the rounds.
Okay.
And the first person you have to fight is just the guy who just never left, I guess. He's the champion of the qualifying round.
Ah.
Which is like, if you remit, it just means everyone has beaten you. Or like, you've never been able to get further up. But he, I can't remember what his name is. Probably some really sad name.
Can we call him Glass Joe?
Glass Joe is funny because he has, I think the reason he's still there, he has such an undying optimism.
Aww.
He's got such a good attitude towards everything, which is not something you find in the upper echelons of the fighters. Like, this dude's, like, chill. He's good to hang out with.
Just glad to be there.
You do have to kick his butt, though.
Of course.
So, and how he's dare, cool with it.
How dare he think he can have such positivity,
like,
around me.
I commend you. It was a good fight. Now you get to move up. I'm just gonna stay here in the qualifying rounds.
And then you spit on him.
He's like, one day, one day I might go. You could, I guess. But, so, then I can't remember the other ones because they're not quite as memorable. They're just more mean.
Yeah. Well, I have a feeling this game, the arena isn't exactly meant to be, like, memorable. It's just, let's do some fighting.
Well, one cool thing is you get to choose a name. So, they give you a couple of names that you can pick from. But I think I always went for, like, the Raging Dragon or something like that.
Okay.
They give you a really cool name to sort of hype up the crowd, because they're not going to give your real name to them. And
do you have, like, is there, like, a voiceover saying the name?
Yes.
It does that? Because Oblivion does that. They're arena. Yes. They're like, what do you want your grand champion name to be? And you can be like, Black Flower. And then the announcer guy will be like, here comes Black Flower.
So at this point in the game, you are in the Imperial City.
Okay.
Which means you're, like, 75% done.
Cool. Actually, it's a little surprising that this mode would be introduced so late.
Well, here's the thing. It's not a practice arena.
Okay.
But it can be. So at this point, you're 75% of the way through the game. For pretty much each area you go through to get here, you can pick up new skills.
Yeah.
In fact, in the Imperial City, you can pick up new skills. And by new skills, I mean fighting styles. So you map the fighting styles you like to use, such as Leaping Tiger, which is one of my favorites, where you just basically have Wolverine claws and you slash at people. It's very quick and does a lot of damage.
That is something I did appreciate about this game, is, like, it had more diversity in your combat style than I expected.
Especially the way that you set up that D-pad. So the D-pad, of course, only has four directions, so you can only map four fighting styles to it. You can go in the middle of battle and change that. I've done it. But for the most part, your quick access is only four of these fighting styles. By the end of the game, I had 20-25 fighting styles in my list.
Which is crazy.
So you pick them up in different ways. Some of them use weapons, some of them don't. They're just martial. Or, I don't know if martial arts includes weapons.
Yes, it does.
Okay, well, some of them include weapons, a lot of them don't. Some of them are magical.
Oh, of course. That makes sense.
The magic one that uses chi. The magic one I like to use is the dire flame where you throw fireballs at people.
Nice.
There's its counterpart where you throw ice at people. There's several of them where you can turn into demons, which you get after you fight them. So there's toad demon, there's horse demon.
This does sound familiar. I don't think I've seen it, though.
Yes. Then there's another magical one that is, I think, called white dragon, where you basically summon, like, a spectral white dragon that blows fire at people. That one's very powerful, but you don't move. It's a little bit slow acting, and you don't move, so I never use it.
It's one of those slow, heavy hitter type.
Yes. Ones. And then you have support styles. You have Heavenly Wave, which is... I don't know if it's so much a support style, but it is, it's a more graceful punching kind of style. And then there's Thousand Cuts where you do a lot of just very fast punching. Then you have Spirit Thief, which is pretty much the
only... You steal their soul.
You steal their chi.
Oh, okay.
So you can use chi for both magical abilities and to heal yourself.
So chi is basically like the magicka, the mana...
Yes. You can use it three different ways. To heal yourself, to use magic fighting styles, or to give your melee or regular attack fighting styles more punch and take damage their chi.
I like that. It reminds me kind of F-Zero, the sci-fi racing games from way back,
mm-hmm.
where your car's health... And your boost were the same bar.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to choose.
You have to be careful.
Do I want to use my chi to, you know, prolong my life, or to use it to do more damage?
Was my big problem in the final battle, which I'll get to. But this arena, you know, you've got probably 20 fighting styles at this point that you've learned from a whole bunch of people. Some of them you learn from other people in the arena. Like, I think Crimson Tears is the two-bladed one. I think you learn that at the school. But you go in and you get through all of these levels, and because you're facing such a variety of opponents, like the ad said, beasts, demons, other competitors, because you're facing such a variety, it does kind of push you to use different combat styles. Especially if maybe you... Because some of them are immune to magic. Some of them are immune to melee. One that I like to use, because it had a lot of reach, I had a quarterstaff.
Gotta love them.
Golden Star, I think.
Something like that.
However, this particular weapon that you get at the beginning of the game, it's either a staff or a sword, uses focus.
Yeah, I was thinking about that just now, and I couldn't quite...
Focus is how you can... If you activate focus, it will slow down the battle around you while you continue to move at the same speed.
Didn't I use this to run around a bunch?
Yes.
I remember doing
that. So you move faster than everyone else because you have focus. Or you can use it to fuel these weapon attacks. So that one I like because it's got a lot of reach. I like Dire Flame because it gives me range. I like Leaping Tiger because that's honestly how I beat the final boss.
Do you just jump behind him a lot?
No, in front of him. I just did a flurry of slaps and scrapes so that he couldn't attack. And then I hit him with the hard stuff.
So you stun locked him.
Okay. Basically. Yeah. It was...
I didn't think you'd be able to stun lock a boss.
So, yeah, it was really... It took me 3 or 4 tries, but I finally got it to go. So, that's why I like the arena, though, because it just gives you such a variety of people to interact with. It gives you a chance to show off your fighting styles. It gives you that feeling of success when you rise all the way to the top. But it's also how the Lotus Assassins, I wouldn't say get introduced. You know about them since pretty much the beginning of the game.
That's where they make their premiere.
But that's how you join the Lotus Assassins.
Oh.
Is they come, anytime someone gets past silver level, or gets to silver level, they come out and they go, hey, their recruiters come in, say, hey, you're pretty tough. We could use you.
They talk you up, pay for your dinner.
Yeah.
Classic recruiter technology. So
then you're like, yes, because you need to get into the Lotus Assassins so that you can dismantle some stuff that they're doing for Death's Hand and ruin the plans of the people there.
Infiltrate from the inside.
So, back to the main plot of this story. Here's all the spoilers. The reason the ghosts are restless is because the spirit of the dead, the one who ferries them into the afterlife and guides them and whatnot, is called the Water Dragon. She is trapped.
Oh.
And the person who trapped her, so something you find out about as well, I think you learn a lot about this history when you're in Tien's Landing, kind of stuck there because your flyer crashed. There was a drought for a very, very long time. And then the current emperor, ended the drought. And because they think of their emperors as gods, it was like, the emperor did this. He ended their drought, he gave us life and all of this stuff, but it's not going well because the spirits are restless and just bad stuff is happening. Well, it turns out, the way that they got the water back was enslaving the water dragon.
They grabbed her and just kind of just wrung her out.
Yeah, and that's actually when you get to the palace, which is a floating palace in the sky.
Of course.
That you can only get to by flyer. Which is lucky that you befriend Kang the Mad, who's the inventor of the flyers.
Of course.
You go into one of the rooms, which is where the water dragon is. To this point, you've just had her appearing to you as, like, a woman talking to you in dreams, and
it does that trope as well of...
Yes, because...
The damsel in distress.
I should also explain, the reason you're getting these dreams, the reason this is your fate, you are the last of the spirit monks who could communicate with the water dragon, and who were supposed to help people...
I see.
To the afterlife, stuff like that, and could they had that sensitivity, sort of like Dawnstar does. And Dawnstar has a story that sort of relates to that. I cannot, for the life of me, remember what it is. So, you are the last. All of your people were killed by the Emperor and Death's Hand at Dirge. And supposedly Master Li saved you and brought you back to Two Rivers. This is not what happened. Because Master Li was the one who destroyed your people. And then he took you back to Two Rivers. I believe this is how it goes. Like I said, I only played the end of it recently. It's very twisty, but it turns out your Master Li is Sun Li, the Glorious Strategist, the Emperor's brother.
Oh.
And he was, I wouldn't say jealous of his brother, but he wanted the power, and he wanted to be a god. So the Glorious Strategist went ahead and...
devised a glorious strategy.
Yes. So he had everything destroyed at Dirge so that he could enslave the Water Dragon. And, gosh, this is really confusing now that I try and think about it. Anyway, the point is, he built you up so that you could do a lot of the things that you did, particularly communing with the deities and such, and being set down this path, and probably removing a lot of obstacles for him that he had. And just to, at the end, find out that, you know, your Master Li, the person you've been trying to save, was the big villain all along.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to fight him.
A classic.
And what he did was this I find a little bit funny. He built you up and trained you so that you were, like, the best fighter in, like, all of the Jade Empire. But you had one flaw in your fighting style. And people bring this up to you over the course of the game. You'll go against people, like, one of your companions down the line. Your initial encounter with her is you fight her because she thinks you're part of the Lotus Assassins or something.
Of course.
She's actually a princess, but she likes to put on a black outfit and a black mask and run around doing sneaky stuff.
There's a lot of tropes in this game.
Yes. So, it's an older game. I think it's fun, though. She talks to you. She's like, okay, I understand. I can see that you're not an enemy. There's something about you, though. You're very powerful. You're a good fighter, but there's just something about the way you fight. A flaw somewhere, but I couldn't tell you what it is. And I'm like, I don't understand how that would work. Of you knowing there's something wrong, but not knowing what it is. And people say this to you several times until you get to Master Li, who's like, yes, I programmed a flaw into your code so that I could later exploit it. And then he does, and he kills you.
Ah.
And then you wake up in the spirit world, and the water dragon's like, yo, dog, I got you. And brings you back. And Master Li is like, for all of my planning, I did not expect this. I'm like, yeah, glorious strategist. Didn't think the spirit monk was going to come back to stop you.
The spirit monk came back from the spirit realm. Shocker.
Yeah. So that one was fun. The boss fight, I don't know why I didn't get past it before. First thing he does is summon stone things to come fight you. And for whatever reason, I couldn't get past that, I guess. Because that's where I was when I started the game up the other day. But yeah, Elena watched me fighting that. And I told her, I said, I haven't been able to get past this. And she was watching me fight. And she goes, I see you went to the Dark Souls school of fighting. And I said, how do you mean? She goes, you dodge and roll until you can just get a hit in. And then you dodge and roll. And then you dodge and roll. And then you get hit in. And you dodge and roll.
That's how it is.
That was the only way that I could defeat anybody.
Because if they hit you, you basically die.
Yeah. So it wasn't that hard until I got to Master Li. The reason that one was hard, he says, you know, I'm not going to use godly abilities. We're just going to fight, you know, using regular martial arts, which is basically all the styles that you've learned.
Other trope.
And except that the one thing he does differently is the focus. So the way that your ability to slow down the time around you and you move faster, he does that to you.
So he's like super fast?
Sometimes. So he turns it off and on.
Uh-huh.
And you have to do it back at him, basically. And the only way I could do it was as soon as the fight started, I flipped on my focus so that he was very slow and couldn't defend himself. I threw a bunch of fire at him as much as I could until my focus was pretty much gone. And then I went after him with Leaping Tiger, stun locking him until I could back up, throw a bunch more fire at him because that's my big damage, and then kill him.
So you blitzed him.
Yes.
A Dark Souls anecdote, since that was relevant now. There is a boss in that game where the generally accepted strategy is blitz him.
Yeah.
He said, that's not how I fight either. I'm a very defensive, take-my-time, reaction-type player.
Yeah.
So I was having a really hard time, you know, beating this boss until one day, like, you know, screw it. Change up my entire character build to be one that just does damage and takes damage. And then, of course, that was the time I beat him.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, just changing up that strategy really can make a difference.
I had to remap my abilities because I needed Spirit Thief at that point. I needed to heal, and I needed to cast the fire.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that was a toughie.
That's a cool... I like that concept, though, of a slowdown time skill that you've had for so long, and, like, the final boss also having it.
I never used it. The only reason
I'd abuse it.
The only reason I upped my focus at all is because I liked using the staff.
Yeah.
So
I could totally get down on just some high-speed... Okay. Butt whooping.
So the next thing I want to talk about is going to be my last section is all the characters. I love the characters in this game because, like I said, a lot of them have information or, you know, parts of them are essential to the plot. And some of them are just, it's fun. And this is one BioWare game where I think that the companions were so well done that I find none of them were forgettable.
That seems to be a skill of theirs, making good characters.
But, like, with Knights of the Old Republic, I can really only tell you about three of each set of companions. Dragon Age, I know them very well because I was around them a lot. But I think my favorite set of companions is in Jade Empire, because they're all just wacko. So, you got Dawnstar, who's basically, like... I think Dawnstar and Sky are probably your most even keel normal people, which I assume means they're the top romance options. Then you get...
Is there romance in this game?
Yes, there is, and I'll get to that. Sagacious Zhu, who's another... I think he's also eligible for romance. Former Lotus Assassin, who's trying to atone for what he did.
Oh.
Also another trope that BioWare likes to do.
Yeah.
That was also one of my favorite characters in Knights of the Republic 2. He is you know, he keeps things close to the chest, and he is drama boy. Everything is the worst. And he's like, oh, just get ready for it to be bad. It's like, listen, like, Dawnstar does this to him. She's like, listen, I want to have at least a shred of hope after I walk out of here. I need you to stop. And he's like, well, all right, fine. I guess nobody wants to talk about reality. She's like, I'm so tired of him. I'm done. But then you meet the Black Whirlwind, whom I assume you would like. He was actually the champion of the arena for a time.
Nice.
But he had to kill his brother.
Ah.
So he left, and he's, like, persistently drunk.
Oh, and is he the Way of the Drunken Fist guy?
Or? No.
No, he's just persistently drunk.
Which is funny. This dude is always... He always wants to be drunk. He's always drinking. He fights with two axes. He's a huge dude with this, like, wild mane of black hair. He loves to fight and he loves to drink. That's his two things.
Okay.
And he's a fun dude. And then, yeah, you meet Henpeck Tao.
That's it. I know that name.
When you first meet him, he is... a chef for cannibals, and you go to this inn that is just full of cannibals, and they kept telling the town of Tien's Landing, we need help up here, and so they send you to help out, and they're like, oh, yes. And they look like humans for the time, but it's very creepy out there. I mean,
cannibals normally are human.
No, actually, in this one, they're like these little, like, hunched over monster.
Are they not actually humans?
No, they can just look like humans.
So is it not cannibalism? Is it?
I think it's just that their lifestyle has warped them, I think is how
it goes. Oh, like a Wendigo type deal.
Sort of. So you meet him. He's the only normal one there, and he's quite nervous. He's like this skinny strip of a man. And you talk to him in the back. He's like, listen... Okay, listen, you don't want to be here. Please go. I don't want to be here. If I could have left, I would have done it. He talks very quickly. He's very silly. And his name is Henpeck Tao because he keeps, like, leaving his wife, who's nagging. She is constantly nagging him.
Yeah.
Never gonna... He used to be a champion fighter until somebody was so pleased with him, a patron, I think, that he gave him... his daughter to marry, who happened to be this very naggy, persnickety woman. How was miserable. She made him stop fighting and become a bun master. So he bakes buns. And he teaches you the drunken warrior style.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't drink anymore, but that used to be his main style.
Yeah.
So he teaches you that, and if you have him as a companion and you use this style, he will throw jugs of wine into the battlefield. You pick them up, and then you start just flailing your fists around.
Oh, yeah. I love that it's like it's an actual fighting style.
It is. It's slow, but it packs
very,
a punch.
Very loose.
Very loose, and it's just, yeah, you just get in there.
I'm talking about real life, by the way.
I know.
Okay. The line had blurred.
No, it is a real thing. You can look it up. So that's where he comes in, and he's very anxious all the time. So he's kind of a fun character. Then you have Sky, who's the hunky guy.
With a very, like a dreamboat type deal?
Yes.
That's a very dreamboat name.
Yes. He comes in when you're... going after Gao the Greater, you go to an island of pirates that are supposedly his men, and you find out they've been doing a slave trade. So you free all the slaves that are there, but someone else is also trying to do that, and it's Sky. The reason he's trying to do this is because his wife and child were, I think, taken to be slaves. His wife, he's a thief, and I think his wife was also like a master thief. That's how they met. And then they had a kid, and then, you know, this whole slavery thing happened. They're both dead now.
And then this whole slavery thing
happened. Yeah, so they're both dead, and he's trying to take revenge on Gao the Greater for that. So he's a you know, former father, former husband, who's got a soft heart, but he's also roguish, because he's a thief, and he sneaks into places, and he's very hot, and he's very... So, yeah, that's Sky.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I romanced him. They don't give you very many, like, scenes like they do in these more recent games.
Yeah.
You basically just get something towards the end. A one-on-one conversation.
Ah, I see.
And you get some flirting dialogue, and that's about it.
So, Fire Emblem levels of relationship.
And then, you know, in the last stretch, you get Kang the Mad, who was forced to work for Gao the Greater to build him flyers and stuff. So you get him, and he is in control of your flight patterns from then on. So if you need to fly somewhere, you go talk to Kang. Oh, and then there's Wildflower, who's a child.
Ah, I know about this one.
She's a little girl who can sometimes turn into a demon.
Yes.
And it's because this demon named Chai Ka raised her from the dead. She died as a child, and he took her and was like, you'll be my vessel now. I have to go serve the last spirit monk.
Oh.
So he's waiting for you when you find him, and he's very cool. He's a very wise dude. However, there's his other side that is also within Wildflower. And I think, depending on whether you walk the way of the open palm or the closed fist, one will become dominant over the other. I know Chai Ka is the good one. Mm-hmm. There, I don't know if the bad one has a name, but he comes out every so often. He's very violent. And it's very funny when he doesn't come out in Chai Ka form and just talks through Wildflower and her eyes get all glowy and you hear her talking this deep gravelly voice, very freaky. And all of your other companions are like, I'm unsettled. I'm going to go over here while you talk to the little girl.
Demon child.
Yeah. So I love all of the companions. They're so good. But possibly my favorite has to be your pocket store.
Yes. Right.
So this is the last thing I'm going to talk about. Your pocket store, also known as Xinbu the Magic Abacus, which is so funny. This man is not an abacus, quote unquote, like the thing with all the beads on it. He is, however, he used to be a recorder for the gods, basically. So apparently everyone in the lore of this game, everyone has someone assigned to them in the celestial plane who kind of records what you do and balances out, like sees how it balances with the world and destiny and how all of that plays out. However, starting with the pirate invasion of Two Rivers, you kind of wrecked his shop. He could not keep up with you and your exploits from that point onward. This is like two towns later that he catches up with you and he's like, hi, you have no idea who I am, but I very much have something to say to you. And he's like, I lost my job because you caused so much trouble that the stuff was piling up and I just couldn't keep up with it. So they fired me and they demoted me. And now I have to wander around with you, just on call for you, providing you with magical artifacts, which is you have an amulet and you can put different stones in it that do different things.
Uh-huh.
I think it's like up to 3 stones. And they'll do things like up your charisma, or they'll up your intimidation, or they will help you detect traps or disable traps and stuff like that. So
yeah,
he sells those and you can sell them to him. But he is, it's funny. He starts out ranting at you, but by the end of it, he's like, but since I've been assigned this job, I'm going to do the best job anyone has ever done, and then I will someday, hopefully, get back my old job in the recorded business. But for right now, we'll just focus on the present. Please, please, please use my shop so that I can prove to them that I can do things. So he hates you, but he's going to do his best.
Because he is a good employee.
He's my favorite. So you can just call on him whenever you want. You just select him in the companion menu, and he doesn't show up with you, but his store opens up. And so you can purchase gems if he's got any that you want, or what I did was I just sold all my gems to him.
I like the amount of, like, creative effort they put into what is essentially just a regular gameplay
function. Exactly, yeah. So you don't always run into shops, and if you do, it's not necessarily a lot of stock or anything, but just to have a constant... I mean, you don't ever have full inventory. But if you want to get rid of these gems that you're never going to use and just clear it out of the listing, you can go to him. Or if you want to see if he has some good stuff that will maybe improve your fighting or improve how you open boxes, then yeah, he's very useful for that as well. So I think that's just, I just think this is a really genuinely great game. So, yep, that's the companions, I think that the plot may be a little confusing just based on the fact that I really couldn't keep it straight if I tried to tell you what it was. I may have to go look it up again.
I mean, I have a vague enough understanding, I think.
Yes, so the basics of, you know...
There's far more convoluted games.
Your hero turns out to be your enemy.
Like, look at Kingdom Hearts.
But it has to do...
I've read the story of Kingdom Hearts. I still don't understand it.
The reason it's confusing to me explaining it right now is because initially the story that you're told through cutscenes and memories and stuff is told by Master Lee.
Ah, so you have to be like, can I trust this perspective type deal?
Well, you do initially. And yeah. So this whole time you're thinking, that was the Emperor, that's Death's Hand, that's what, this, that, and the other thing. You get to the end of the game and you see that same cutscene, but the faces are, you know, not necessarily different. Actually, it may all play out exactly the same. You just see it from a different angle. And that's what makes it confusing. Is like, I can't remember who was where doing what.
I understand.
But it is a good game. I really, really highly recommend it. If you can get it on anything now.
Oh, that's right. I found it as a mobile game. Because yeah, apparently they ported it to mobile devices.
They ported Knights of the Old Republic and Jade Empire to mobile devices. I have Knights of the Old Republic on my iPad.
I think you can find, like, the definitive edition or whatever it's called on Steam. Maybe on the Humble Store. I'd have to check. I'm going to assume not.
It though. Was for the original Xbox, but
it's an old game.
I do have it on my 360.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
So there is a chance that, you know, if you have later consoles, you can probably get a download of it.
Worst case scenario, you have to play it on a mobile device if you're desperate.
But it's still good. It's
find it buried in your local GameStop for $7.95.
There's a lot of, and like I said, I still think it's beautiful because there's just enough haziness around a lot of the scenery so that when you're in the marshes, it makes it seem humid. When you're in the scary woods, it makes it seem spookier and foggy. And when you're in the Imperial City, it makes it seem glowy and radiant. And it's there's just enough of this like blurry-ish glowy filter to everything that just really works with every single scene that you're in.
I like that you have such a positive outlook on that, because I see that as they had graphical restrictions that they did their best to cover up.
But I think it works.
That's good for them.
Like, especially the lighting in almost every location is beautiful golden lighting. Housekeeping?
Yes. I just want to make sure we covered everything we want to cover.
Yeah, I think I covered it. I think I actually, this is the one time I talked about a BioWare game and felt like I did a good job talking about it. So,
well, you've done good so far, in my opinion.
Thanks.
Housekeeping, the thing that we do at the end so that it's like good for us. Why am I doing it? If you like this, leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. The reviews on there help us get seen by more people because it helps us go higher on the charts. I don't know what charts, but they're there. You can also follow us on Twitter at Cozy Co-op Podcast. I manage that. Not only do we notify you of immediately when our episodes go up, but sometimes I post stupid things.
You post some pretty great things.
Sometimes I get some good
things. I retweet them when they're really good.
I've got one person who likes to retweet, or not retweet, but they like a lot of them.
Low-key call out.
No, exactly who to the person
about.
Who likes
we
all of our
you,
tweets.
We love you, by the way, the person we're low-key calling out. We love you. Continue being you.
We're on Facebook with the same name. If you want to provide feedback, tell us something about a game we talked about. Tell us something about the game we're going to talk about. Give us feedback. I said that one already. Send us a business casual email to cozycoop@thelizardrock.com. Thelizardrock.com is the website where we get our news and stuff. It's where we host the podcast. Go there, and every Monday through Friday, there will be news about video games.
Indeed.
Written by me. I manage the site. Yay, personal efforts. I think that's everything. Our next game...
is not Dark Souls, like not, this paper says.
This piece of paper is 3 weeks old because it was supposed to be... Oh, yeah, you know what I didn't say once this episode?
What?
Poultice.
Oh, yeah.
People waited a month to hear what the poultice was about, and now they don't even get
real
to know.
Real quick?
No, they cannot know the poultice.
Can I please?
No, do not tell them the poultice. Fine, right. Tell them the poultice.
When Two Rivers is attacked, one of your fellow students gets injured, and you have a mini quest where you go get her a poultice.
A healing poultice.
To help her injury heal. And you have the option, this is like your first crossroads, you have the option to either get her one that will make her feel better right now, but won't actually do a lot of healing, or one that will actually heal her in the long run, but she will have to take it easy. And, you know, you can guess which one's the right one.
One's more expensive as well.
The
temporary placebo one.
Is less expensive.
Yeah.
It's cheaper. And the salesman tries to sell you on that because he doesn't want to get rid of expensive merchandise. But you tell him, you know, I need that. And so...
So I guess
But yes, the word poultice is thrown around so much in this, like, 10-minute...
And I didn't know what poultice... What is it? Like an ointment?
Yeah, it's like a paste.
Like a paste. A thick lotion type deal.
Yeah.
That's all it is. And I was just so... I was so chuffed by the idea of poultice.
So... Anyway.
This has been the Cozy Co-op. No,
what game are we doing?
Oh, yeah. What game are we doing? I was going to let you say it.
Minecraft?
Minecraft.
We're going to do Minecraft next week.
The one with blocks and buildings and whatnot.
And I think we'll do Minecraft because it's a nice, calming game for the most part. And Brandon's going to need some nice,
I'm going to be a bit worn out.
Maybe instead of, like, a shot or a Coca-Cola for the episode, we're going to give you some tea.
Give me a nice chamomile.
Yeah.
Sleepy time.
So,
how Brandon falls asleep during the podcast.
That's it for us this week. Join us next week on the Cozy Co-op.
Outro music. That was the laziest outro music yet.
Yay. Bye.